This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
Lighting in here sucks, so I don't know.
You're a little shaded.
Does that look weird? I can take my hat off, but it won't be pretty.
I was gonna say, you just said you got your hair cut for hog camp. Let's see your cut. Oh, look at that.
Pretty sweaty and nasty. So
right. Pretty standard down there for a realtor that's in and out of the truck, showing houses, showing properties.
Yep.
So all right, I want clean and tight, but then at the same time, I mean, we're chasing hogs.
Oh yeah.
So I left the back. Awesome. I did the mullet back in 2020 when COVID went crazy. I actually got a mullet just to be funny. Mm-hmm. And then everything shut down.
Yeah.
And the only way that I could get my hair cut was at a friend's house, which was fine. But at the same time, like then it was like, as the mullet grew out, the roots grew in and I didn't want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
2 years later, I finally cut it.
Yeah.
And everything had gone back to normal. All the high schoolers were in the big rage of mullet. It's since then, I mean, the kids that have them established right now, they have them. It's their persona, yada, yada. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring it back for summer. I'm going to see if I can't keep it short. My cutter, she affectionately calls it hockey hair. So I'm like, I like that. I'm not a big hockey player. I do enjoy hockey. So I'm going to run the hockey hair for a while.
Nice.
Well, folks, we've kind of got off on a tangent. Let me do the intro. It is I want to say beautiful day here in Michigan, but we're back to snowing. We're back to freezing. Tomorrow's going to be super windy, and then we get more precipitation. I say precipitation. I don't know if it's going to be snow. I don't know if it's going to be rain. I don't know if it's going to be all of it. So welcome to March here in Michigan. Spin the wheel, see what we get. And it's going to be probably not in your favor. The pie chart for sunny and warm is real small. So we're inside kind of doing stuff today. And I thought it was a great chance for us to get a hold of our good friend, John Hudspeth, down in Oklahoma. John is the former Oklahoma Outdoors podcast host. Life has happened, so he's gotten busy, both with new job. He's got little girl who's now becoming a handful. He needs to step up. And he's also a new landowner, self-landowner, not just into the family down in Oklahoma. John, thank you so much for jumping on. I know you got a busy schedule down there. How's things in Oklahoma shaping up?
Man, really good. Zero complaints for me because I'm a real estate agent by trade, and which means I'm an independent contractor. So, you know, no set hours. Basically, as long as I have my phone with me, I can be wherever I want to be. And so today, instead of going into the office, went out to my new property that you just mentioned and dissed, seeded, drug, and sprayed two of my food plots. And so any day I'm doing that, I'm very happy. And so, you know, a couple times the phone would ring. I had my headphones in. I was actually taking a work call while broadcasting seed with my little hand spreader. So yeah, any day I'm doing that, I'm happy. So you mentioned, I think you said tomorrow's supposed to be windy up there. So I guess that just left here. So the last 2 days we've had like 30 to 50 mile per hour winds. No snow. It's been, you know, we had a cold front. The high today was only 55. But before that it was in the 80s. We've had a really early spring. And so it's actually put me behind on a lot of my, you know, projects I've been trying to get done. But slowly but surely, you know, chipping away at those projects and just kind of getting, I'm almost to the point where I just kind of get to sit back and watch and, you know, wait for this fall. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, overall doing really well.
Awesome. Awesome. Doing work out on the farm. My boy and I, I wanted to put in a food plot. So he's interested. So he wanted to come along with me. All we've done is frost seeding. I know for Oklahoma, you're like, what's frost? I don't know what that is. Yeah. So that's the only thing that we've done. I had an old bag of turnips that I just didn't know what to do with. And there's a clearing. Actually, it's not too far from where I shot my big Michigan 8-point that I kept looking at it. Like, it's got to stay. It's an area that has to stay clear. We can't have anything grow up in it. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that I can't plant anything in that spot. My first food plot got taken over by semi-trailers for storage. So farm comes first. Mm-hmm. And I know that's kind of the feeling you came from. Yeah. So farm came first. So they were like, Nick, you've really done a good job at making that area clear and flat. We're going to start putting our semi-trailers there. Like, oh, wonderful. So now we get to start over in this new little spot. I don't think they can fit a semi-trailer in it. So I'm feeling good about it. But at least my first steps is I haven't done anything with clover. I really would think a clover spot would be really good on the farm. And so I've started with these turnips. And my idea is if I can frost seed those, get those an early start. And essentially, I have not put any fertilizer down. I have not done any soil work, but I know these turnips are going to end up growing. They're going to break up my hard pack, and then they're going to essentially nutrient mine. They're going to rot with the stuff up top so that when I do finally get around getting soil samples and being able to put clover seed down, I think that's going to at least help what I have to do with that top layer of soil. I'm not sure if that's sound science, but at least that's what I was going with. I had a start, and now it's like, hey, if those turnips can shade out as much of that, the weed and the briars and the prickers before I have to come in with the sprayer, hey, that's just less work that I have to do. So I guess I'm going lazy man plot on that.
Yep. Yep. I'm with you, man. That's pretty close to what I've been doing lately too. So, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into this here in a second, but one of the advantages to having my own property now is that nobody's parking semi-trailers, you know, where I don't want them to. Nobody's putting cows where I don't want them to. One of the disadvantages, though, it's something I figured out very quickly, is, you know, at our family property, it's a full-time working cattle ranch. That comes with a lot of equipment. You know, I have access to, you know, not just a little lawn tractor, full-size tractors, discs, no-till drills, I mean, you name it, we got it. Even up to big equipment like dozers and stuff.
I was going to say, you had a full-on Caterpillar out there last year.
Yes. And so you just never know what you're going to find out there. But so on my property, though, I do not have access to that. And it's far enough away that, you know, I'm not going to drive a tractor down the road. It's about 2 hours from the family property. And so I've really had to kind of reset my expectations and my actual, not just my expectations, but my reality. Because, you know, I have a food plot at our family place that's like 3 acres, you know, 3 or 4 acres. And I mean, I can get that thing sprayed and planted in like a couple hours. Not a big deal. Now everything has shrunk. And so I do have a Ranger. Luckily, for, you know, that's one of the perks of the real estate business. It's a great excuse to buy a Ranger. Great tax write-off. So I got the smaller model. It's the 570, not the big 1000. But I just bought a little sprayer from Tractor Supply to put in the back. And so, and I bought one that has the little boom, which actually I discovered very quickly probably was extra money I didn't need to spend. Because like I did a 1/2 acre plot today, 1/2 acre and 1/4 acre. And with that 7 sprayer boom, I mean, it took me like 8 minutes to spray that thing. So probably could have saved, you know, 100, $150, something like that. And just got like the two nozzle one. But hey, it's awesome. So, but yeah, but you know, like I said, you know, I'm not quite down to full on hand tools, but pretty close, you know? So I bought a little disc, that I can hook up to it, used a bunch of Cabela's points and bought that. And so, you know, it's not heavy enough to really, like, I'm not really plowing. I wouldn't say I'm plowing by any means, but it's enough to kind of scratch up the surface, you know, open it up, and then just used a hand broadcast spreader. And then I made my own drag. I used a 4-inch wooden fence post, and then I cut a cattle panel in half and just wired it to that. So, you know, it's got the post up front to kind of take out the big clods, and then the cattle panel after to kind of drag it. And it actually worked surprisingly well. And then I bought some liquid lime. I did some soil test and my pH was a little low. And so I bought some liquid lime, just throw that in the sprayer. I last week went up there and sprayed it with glyphosate to kill all the vegetation and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, in the matter of, you know, three hours probably. I got 2 different plots. One's about 1/4 acre in the timber, and then one's about 1/2 acre surrounded by just the nastiest honey locust filled flat pecan bottom thing you've ever seen. So yeah, getting after it, but it's a process.
I love the similarities. At least what we get from the north is, you know, we want to put these food plots in, or we want to clear out this area of the woods, and it's going to take, you know, I can't afford a drag. I can't afford this. So I'm literally cobbling together pieces of junk. Redneck engineering at its best, where it doesn't have to look pretty. I'm going to put a few, you know, we're going to put some minutes of thinking. It's one of those where you wake up in the middle of the night. I'm sure you thought of this fence post and cattle panel. It was definitely like middle of the night you woke up and you had that idea and you're like, all right, I'm going to save it for the morning and just put this thing together.
Even better. I was like, it's been crazy enough down here. I actually had to mow the lawn for the first time over the weekend, and I was on the mower and I found the fence post and the tall grass up against the fence. I was like, hey, that's perfect. And so yeah, just like I said, you know, I the most money I spent was on the spray rig. And I think I paid $400 for that. That's the rig. It has the gun for like spot spraying and the boom and everything. But other than that, most of it's just been like, hey, what's laying around here? You know, what can I do? So
wonderful. Wonderful. Also, with this new property, you've had a chance to already take a very impressive white-tailed deer off of this. If you head over to Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, it's at Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. He's got some photos there of his buck. Awesome to be able to take that off the new property. I mean, you talk about a home run right out the gate. Talk to us a little bit about how that hunt went down. You kind of, you know, you were signing papers, getting the deals done, and they gifted you the hunting rights, and you totally jumped on that. Walk us through this story, because this wasn't a slam dunk thing. This still came to you, even as a guy who has the amount of trail cameras, the amount of surveillance, and the guy who can pattern big bucks and be choosy on what he takes. This was still a big surprise for you.
Absolutely. So I actually looked at this property for the first time late spring. It would have been May, I think. And my wife and I, you know, we'd been saving for a while. We're living in a barn right now, and my wife is amazing and decided we could live in the barn a little longer and buy a little piece of property. And so, you know, looking for something small and close. And found this piece. But I was actually looking at a different piece of property, and the agent had this piece for sale and was like, hey, you know, while you're in the area, you should go look at this one too. And it was a little bigger, which meant a little bit more money. And so I wasn't so sure about it. And then the other piece that I had first looked at sold. And so that one was out of the question. Came back to this one, was looking at it, and I finally decided, I think it's worth it. And the big kicker, though, was the seller decided that he would owner finance it to me. So no bank, no loan. He's the bank. So, I gave him a down payment and I just send him a check every month. Works out great for both of us. And so we signed a contract in the very end of October. So deer season had already started. And I was trying to close before rifle season, which is always the Saturday before Thanksgiving. So it would have been a pretty quick close. The title company didn't like it, and the agent realized that. And he's a hunter. He knew what I was trying to do. And so he said, hey, he's like, let me talk to the seller, because he doesn't go out there, he doesn't hunt, and see if we can just go ahead and make it to where you can start hunting. I was like, hey, that works for me. So he called the guy, and the guy basically counted my earnest money as a lease fee, because it's a couple $1,000, and gave me the rights to hunt it. And so I think I set my first camera out. I think it might have been Halloween, October 31st. And so I went out there. I put two cameras out, poured a couple bags of corn out. Oklahoma is a bait state, so that's legal. And just kind of crossed my fingers. The very first buck that I got a picture of was probably 150-inch 10 point. I mean, right off the bat. And wow. So blew me away. I was like, okay, like, I think I got something here. So that was pretty awesome. The second buck I got a picture of was this crazy, non-typical, I couldn't even guess a score. And it was the buck that I ended up killing. I mean, within the first 3 days, I had two very mature bucks. Granted, it's like prime time, rut and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the difficult thing for last season was, I had nothing set up. Didn't have stands, food plots, feeders, nothing. Nothing was established there. The only thing I kind of had going for me was that the previous owner, I don't know if he'd ever even stepped foot on the property. I mean, nobody had been out there in like 2 years. So it was very thick, very grown up, and it had not been disturbed. And so I was trying to tread lightly. At the same time, it was not mine yet. And so it's not like I could just hit the ground running and start putting in food plots, even though it was too late in the year. I didn't really want to take all the time to throw out a feeder and blinds and stuff, and then something fall through and I not be able to purchase the property.
Pull it all out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the hunting was tough because it's only 60 acres. It's not like I could, learn a whole bunch about the surrounding property and stuff. And so it was rough. And, basically as soon as the rut kind of died off, I stopped getting all those pictures. We finally closed December 12th. And so December 12th, I went out there and I actually put a feeder up. Again, it's, the season's kind of winding down. Right around Christmas, I got a couple pictures of this non-typical buck again. Never saw the 10 point again. Had some younger bucks kind of stopping by. I had a family group of five does that were there every day. The season was kind of winding down. I hunted out of state quite a bit last year, which kind of took away from my hunting here. And then after probably New Year's, all the bucks disappeared. And again, this place, there's no food, there's no ag in this area. Like you zoom out on Google Earth and I mean, you just keep going and going and there's not a single piece of agriculture. Well, not agriculture, you know, there's cows, but no farmland. And so, so I, you know, kind of gave up on it. I was like, you know, it'd be cool. And then I think the season ended on a Wednesday. January 15th is the end of our season. And so I talked to my wife. I was like, hey, season's almost over. Hail Mary type thing. I'd like to hunt Tuesday and Wednesday afternoon. She's like, yeah, go for it. So Tuesday I went out there, sat over the feeder, didn't see a single thing. I was like, man, I'm wasting time. And so I actually was not going to hunt Wednesday. I was like, you know what? I'll throw in the towel. First year and I don't know how long I had not killed a buck in Oklahoma. And then it was the very last day of the season. I told my wife, I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go. She's like, hey, it's the last day. Like, just go. I was like, okay. And so I had this one random ladder stand that I'd put up, probably sometime in November. I had not sat it a single time. It was just kind of along the creek. And so went out there, sat in that stand, and Crispy, who I'm sure we'll get to in a second.
Oh, Crispy's... yes, we will talk, but yeah, let's leave Crispy
okay,
out.
Okay, all right, I won't ruin, but I had an encounter with Crispy, and then I'm sitting there in my stand, and all of a sudden I look up, and I just see a buck walking out in front of me, and I recognize it right away. It was a really nice four-year-old buck. He's a typical eight-point, had kind of a kicker. And so I actually pulled out my phone and started videoing him because I wasn't planning to shoot him, even though it was the last day of the season. And so I'm videoing. And then as he's kind of walking through the brush, I see another deer. And I was like, oh, I guess there's two bucks. And then they walk out into the open. And I was like, oh, that's the buck. And so I kind of got caught with my pants down. So put my phone back in my pocket and I'm sitting, you know, super still. Eventually was able to get my bow up and get a good shot at him. And, he's actually my biggest buck with a bow ever. He unfortunately right around New Year's, he broke off his very longest tine. So he would have been a 13 point. He ended up, I rough scored him at 151 with the broken tine. So with, you know, I'm guessing that was probably about 9 inches. So probably would have been about 160 inch buck. Perfect shot. Didn't go far. I did have to drag him through all the honey locust stuff, which is terrible. I haven't mentioned that yet. This place is rough, and there's a bunch of really big pecan trees that, you know, you can't reach your arms around. And then if it's not a pecan tree, it's a honey locust tree with thorns. You know, seems like they're 18 inches long. I know they're not actually that long, but I mean a solid 4 to 5 inch long thorn. Got him drug out and everything. I had to give my wife a huge thank you because I would not have gone if she wouldn't have told me to go. It was super special to take a deer like that on a property that I own and am about to put a bunch of work into just meant the world to me.
That's awesome. Yes. I double down on the kudos to the wife. I think we do. I mean, we always like to tag or joke about how, you know what? Oh, they keep us out of the woods, and it's always like the call back home. But at the same time, like I would say, I've been encouraged, much like your wife has. It's like, hey, get up and get out there. You said you were going to do this. Do this, and like, it's one of those like, pick up your shield, go to war, and come back either on it or with it. Like it's really a charge that does get us fired up. So I am super excited to have her do that for you.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, little insider info too. You were texting us as this was all going down. So like living the minute by minute, you were like, I just shot a huge deer. And, you know, me speaking of those locusts, you were like, I'm waiting for him to die. He's just sitting over here. You know, he's still looking around. Well, no, his head was propped up in the honey locust.
So I forgot about that. Yeah. I thought he was
spent an extra hour just looking at him.
Yeah. I thought he was still alive because I didn't have my binoculars with me and I could see that his head was still up. And I was like, man, I guess I'm going to have to give him some more time, even though the shot felt great. And then, eventually I walked up to him and his head was caught in a locust bush and it was holding it up. So yeah, forgot that detail.
But that was so fun to just relive that. Just the texting back and forth. Yes. Very, very cool. Mentioning these big pecan trees at your family's ranch, before you guys started ranching it, it had been completely logged off. And as you've been putting work into these different plots on the family ranch and setting up these different spots, screens and feeding areas and pinch points, all this stuff, one thing just the years that we've been going down, you keep coming back with, I wish I had some mature trees, because a lot of stuff is from the ground. We have these blinds. You've got a few stands that are out there, but the trees that are there, they're in the riparian zone. They're right along the water, real crooked, jagged. They didn't have any market value, so that's why they were left there. And now you're doing this big transition where you're now thick with these big pecan trees, but now you have to establish this property. What is going to be the highlight now of the new property, of its feature? Is it these mature trees that you have? Is there a new scarcity, be it water, or do you have, seems like these elements are all there on this property, and so now it's one of those things like you get to make it a paradise rather than a shared area?
So first thing I'll say is be careful what you wish for, because I do have a bunch of these giant pecan trees, and unfortunately, a lot of them are so big, I'm not sure I can put a stand in them because they're so, I mean, like, I don't know if I can reach my arm. Yeah. Which I mean, and then the other kind of downside of pecan trees is they lose their leaves pretty early, and they don't have a bunch of branches. And so when they lose their leaves, you're wide open. And so, I think I mentioned I shot that buck out of a ladder stand, and I've not hunted in a ladder stand in a long, long time. But one thing that I've been looking into is I think Millennium makes one, and then some other Muddy makes one. They make these big ladder stands that have a 360 degree swivel seat. And so instead of sitting up against the tree in it, like in a traditional one, you're actually sitting in a chair up there. And so my wish, they're a little expensive because there's so much more metal and everything.
Yeah. Isn't everything expensive now?
So, but my dream scenario would be to get a couple of those and put them up like in a fork of the pecan tree, kind of on the backside, almost basically saddle hunting out of one of these chairs. So that way I can put it on the backside. I can have the tree in front of me and, you know, kind of basically shoot around the tree almost like I'm in a saddle. And so that's kind of my plan for the pecan trees. You mentioned the property itself and kind of what it has and doesn't have. Part of the reason I'm putting so much time and effort into these food plots is because that is absolutely the lowest hole in the bucket. I'm a big Bill Winkie fan, and Bill loves to use the bucket analogy. Think of your property as, you know, a 5-gallon bucket that has a bunch of holes in it. If you patch those holes on the top, it's not doing you any good because water's still going to come out the bottom. You got to find the lowest hole and patch it first. And so, like I said, zooming out on Google Earth, I mean, like looking at the neighbors, I'm not even finding deer feeders or anything, which is very rare for Oklahoma. Wow. It's awesome because I don't think I have a lot of pressure around me. But yeah, food is definitely the limiting source. And that's why I was not seeing all those deer in December and January, because, you know, those honey locust trees put off a little pod, but those were all, you know, scooped up. They're not very, like, deer don't, I don't think they're very desirable for deer. No ag. So yeah, food is a huge, huge priority. I do think I'm going to put in a water station. And I've done some research online and in some groups and stuff. And I don't think I'm going to bury it. I think I'm just going to go to Tractor Supply and buy 100-gallon stock tank and just put it on top of the ground, because one thing I'm worried about, and I'm sure we'll get into this also, everything I do on this property, I have to worry about hogs. It's the worst.
They followed you. They followed you.
Yeah. and so, like, I would love to do a corn food plot, but I can't. The hogs, like, you'd never have a chance. The water, like, I, you know, a lot of people like to bury the tank in like a little ravine so that it can fill itself. Well, I think all I'm going to end up is, you know, a hog hot tub if I do that. And so, I found some Oklahoma specific, you know, hunting groups and asked a bunch of people. And basically everybody's like, we just leave them above the ground. You know, you have to fill them, but the deer use them, the hogs don't. And so, I already got it. Actually, I used it to fill my sprayer today. I got on Amazon and ordered a, water bladder. It's a 100-gallon water bladder. I think it was $100. Mm-hmm. And so, today I filled it up because I wanted to do stuff with my ATV before I sprayed. And so I filled that bladder up, you know, ran my disc and all that stuff, threw the sprayer in and then filled it with that bladder. And then when I get my water tank, I'll just do the same thing. So I'm going to buy a 100-gallon water tank. So I bought a 100-gallon bladder. So I'll just fill it up in the back of my pickup truck, put a little 6-foot hose on it and just fill the water trough with that.
Bladders are slick.
Yeah.
My buddy uses one. So they go boondocking with their RV a bunch. Mm-hmm. And so they'll have power, but they won't have water.
Yeah.
And so he'll go up to the water station or in town, wherever they got water. And he's got that 100-gallon bladder in the back and he'll fill that up. And he'll literally pull right next to the RV and just fill up the drinking water tank just mm-hmm. with that bladder. And yep. it's like, what a sweet system. Because otherwise you were like, well, fill everything up and then you got to get there. And, you know, you've overdone your little half-ton truck like I always do. I've maxed out with all the liquids. And he's like, nah, I don't do that. I just got a bladder and it's all good. So, no, those things are very handy.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been impressed with it. So yeah, food and water. And then I'm not going to get to it this year. Next year it will be cover, kind of the last hole in the bucket. I don't think I have the time. Like I said, we've already kind of had an early spring. And so next year I'd love to plant some, you know, warm season grasses, be it switchgrass or native grass, something to get some more cover. And during the summer, it's not going to be an issue. And into most of the hunting season, like I said, when I first looked at that place in May, the grass was shoulder high in most mm-hmm. places. But just, you know, as the year, like right now, you know, you can see as far as you want to see because it all died and laid down. And so putting something out there, it's a little more hardy, maybe a little more winter tolerant, would be awesome. So
even with the non-disturbance, even the overgrowth, are you talking cover specifically for your entry points, or is this cover for the animals as well, being able to
both
have them go places?
Yeah, both. So, so I'm in my food plot plan. I put in some screening area, or I'm going to, it's a little early. Mm-hmm. Clover is more of an early season seed. And so that's why I went ahead and got it in now. I have another about acre and a half of food plots I'm going to put in, kind of a big destination food source. And I'm going to screen an entry and exit for that. And then I'm going to screen another place where you can kind of see if you know what you're looking for, you could see into the food plot I planted today from this oil field road. And I don't want people, you know, driving them around back there and seeing deer out in my little food plot.
Look, a feeder. Yeah, exactly. You know, if I park right here come hunting season or whenever.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a little bit of screening I decided I'm only going to run one feeder on this place and it's going to be right there with that big food plot. And that's going to be, I think I'm going to name it just the destination. Like I hope that every deer within 2 miles, like every day they come to this big food source. Yeah. I'm going to have a corn feeder, a protein feeder, at least an acre and a half. I could go up to like 2.5 acres of a food plot. And then my plan is to not actually hunt that, but hunt it just like in an ag field or whatever, you know, hunt all the travel corridors coming to and from. There's a big creek that cuts the place almost exactly in half. It's the walls are just steep enough that deer can't cross wherever they want to. And so I walked that entire creek after the season and there's basically 4 crossings on that whole creek. That's 400 yards, on my property, something like that. And so I'm going to have a stand at every single one of those crossings and probably a camera and whichever one they seem to like the most, that's where I'll be hunting.
That's one you're going to go to.
Very excited for it.
Excellent. Well, this has been fun to do a little bit of the habitat stuff. I'm still novice at it, mainly because it's always been farm first, so I haven't done a whole lot of work, but like finding these little pockets where I'm doing my, you know, little DIY, get in there with hand tools and get after it, and now being able to hear you go after your own little piece of paradise. Both family farm and now I'm hearing the new place is affected by these wild hogs. This pops up all the time. Problem, issue. You can't plant certain things. Ag is really difficult. That's why cattle seems to work really well here. At least the cattle and the hogs semi coexist. You've talked before saying like the hogs will bully the cows off feeders, you know, knock over calves to get at their grain. Has the problem become more in your face? Is it becoming more and more of an issue? Or are you seeing a little bit of a leveling out where now it's the same issue that I had last year? Are you seeing numbers get out of hand, or are they still pretty balanced? They're not balanced because they're overrun, but is they getting more overrun at that point?
Dry aged steaks used to be a steakhouse only indulgence. An old world charcuterie was pricey due to being imported or created at a small batch specific scale. Thanks to UmiDry, their synthetic dry aging bags and cases allow you to create these meat crafting treats in your own kitchen. Working in tandem with your fridge, the UmiDry bag material allows moisture and air to pass through, making it possible to dry age large cuts of steaks or roasts. Paired with their curing and seasoning kits, along with safe and easy to follow instructions, salamis and dry sausage are well within your grasp. Use the link in the show notes and sign up for the newsletter to receive 10% off your order. UmiDry, helping us elevate our wild game from the home kitchen.
Hunters, listen up. If you're tired of struggling to hoist up your deer or big game after a successful hunt, it's time to upgrade to TIBOS Block and Tackle. With its self-locking mechanism, you can easily lift up to 300 pounds by yourself without the need to tie off to anything. Just pull the rope and it locks in place. Made in America and backed by a lifetime warranty, TIBOS is my go-to tool for all my hoisting and tying down needs. Check out the link in the show notes or head over to tyboss.com.
I wouldn't say more overrun, no. If you ask me, like when I was a kid, like a young kid, hogs were still fairly new along the Red River. I've basically lived my entire life on the Texas-Oklahoma border, one side or the other. And like I still remember seeing a group of hogs when I was probably 7 or 8. And I was with my dad and brothers, and it was like a big deal. Like we were like, oh my gosh! Like we had heard of them, but we had never seen them. And you know, and so that's been, you know, almost 30 years. Now, if you ask me if are there more hogs today than there were 10 years ago, probably not. It's been a pretty consistent population problem, whatever you want to say it, for probably the last 15 to 20 years, somewhere in there. I have heard of people in, like, they are spreading. So like I said, you know, we're already overrun populated, however you want to say it. I have, like, one of my good high school buddies, we're still friends to this day, and his dad grew up in the panhandle of Texas, and they had never seen a hog. You know, didn't have them, didn't have to worry about them. And then like 2 or 3 years ago, they got their first picture of a hog on camera. And 3 years later, I wouldn't say they see hogs all the time, but it's not like a surprise anymore. You know, like it's, and they have like a creek on their property, and you know, the creeks are kind of how the hogs disperse because they need that water. You may know this, hogs don't sweat, and Texas is pretty warm. And so they really have to kind of follow the water because they need that mud and the heat of the day to keep themselves cool. So where I'm at, I wouldn't say we've noticed a difference, but I do think they have spread to new areas really still spreading to new areas.
Have they made it up to Missouri yet?
I believe Missouri is one of the states that made hog hunting illegal because they... people were bringing them in for sport, you know, to turn, you know, they were bringing them in and turn them loose because they wanted to go hog hunting, or maybe it was like an outfitter and they wanted to sell hog hunts. And so Missouri actually made it illegal to kill them, and they pretty much wiped them out because of that. So like if you, you know, if you saw any or whatever, you'd call the state would send a chopper or a trapper or whatever it is. And as far as I know, they've kept them pretty well at bay.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Shoot. That was, I mean, I guess I didn't, there's always that guy. There's always that guy that wants to just ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah.
Or and at a least lot of, like he wants to have fun in the meantime, but then doesn't think about his actions in the greater scheme of things.
A lot of northern Oklahoma doesn't have hogs. They just haven't quite got there. I think most Oklahomans are aware enough of the problem that if they do show up, you know, in a fringe area, they do whatever it takes to drive them back. So,
right.
Yeah.
So it comes again back into your world. Years ago, you said, hey, we've got these hogs. I got these guys that like to shoot things. We should have them down. We should have a good time. I jumped in and, you know, again, my world was rocked a little bit because these are a problem animal. These are a nuisance animal. Problem and nuisance animals are not foreign to me in the fact that being at a turkey farm, varmints are constantly an issue. Raccoons trying to break in. Possums trying to break in. So using means and necessary, you know, using necessary means to get rid of larger populations, we've always been a part of that. I guess my big thing was like when I thought of nuisance animals, I thought of it like less than 5 pounds, small, not in your face. But then to see a 250-pound problem and to not have just one of those, but as we've seen, had 30 in a group, 30 problems moving around. And for us to try and take all 30 out to help out the family farm, to try and at least take this sounder out, like it was a little bit awe-striking to me. The fact that we're just guns a-blazing on these hogs. I do love the pep talk that you give us. Like this is extermination, fellas. Like you are helping us with more rounds down range. When it stops squealing, we know you've done the job. And so that's, it was just, you know, it's one of those stark things where I look at it like every animal that I've taken, you know, it's kind of one of those things as a kid growing up. And even like I'm teaching my boys now, like, hey, if we shoot it, we're going to eat it. And the thing that I want to have behind it is that this is work. Like, yes, we get to have fun, but there's a responsibility to it. There's a weight to this. If you don't want to go get said critter, clean it, cook it, then maybe you shouldn't shoot it. But we're thinking this isn't the picture at all we're trying to do here. This is, we're trying to save the cattle. We're trying to save the rancher in doing all of this. That's just a world I haven't experienced. But this is your everyday.
Yeah, and maybe it's different for me because I was kind of raised in it. I grew up in an ag family, farming, ranching, and everything. I probably shot and killed at least 20 hogs before I even attempted to eat one. And a lot of that is just the reputation they had. And I do think there's been a lot of, you know, good publicity, excuse me, for the hog the last few years. But all I ever heard growing up was they're no good. It's like, maybe if you shoot a small one, maybe if it's this, maybe if it's that, if you do this. And so yeah, I mean, you know, when I was younger, there was definitely a fun aspect to it. You know, it's something you can do, you know, there's no season, there's no limit, there's no time frame, like whenever you want to do it. And then, you know, as I got older, it became a little bit more of a responsibility, especially when, like, my immediate family got back into ranching. My dad was always in the cattle business, got out for about a decade, and then we got back in. And I'm kind of the hunter of the family, and so that kind of became part of my job on the ranch, was to try to get rid of these suckers. And so, you know, that's when we got, I bought, you know, a 308 AR, the ranch bought a thermal to put on top of it. And I mean, I like, my job was to perfect getting rid of these suckers. And so, a lot of people would be ashamed of me if I told you how many hogs I had killed compared to how many I had eaten. And even when you guys started coming down, I think I had heard that hogs were good. Like, you know, Jesse Griffith came out with the hog book. Yeah. Meat Eater kind of made the big movement of cooking these things and stuff. But we just hadn't really tried. And a lot of it came down to the fact that, like, we just needed them gone. Like, that was the goal. The goal was, and so, and a lot of times you're hunting at night. And so, you know, when you shoot a hog at 1 a.m. in the morning, the last thing you want to do is then take the time to gut it, skin it, clean it, and all that stuff. You know, down here, it's hot a large majority of the year. So if you don't do that stuff fairly quickly, you're probably not going to want to eat it, you know, especially like in the summertime. And so, it just became a thing. Like, you shoot them, you drag them to the side of the field so you don't hit them with the tractor, and that's that. And then the first time you guys came down, you know, I think you brought 7 coolers or something. I was like, awesome. Yep. And we had some success, and I think you filled up all 7 coolers, and you started sending me pictures of stuff that you were doing with it. And, you know, just like simple, like, you know, like pork chops. And you sent me a picture of these pork chops, and like, my mouth started watering. I was like, that looks delicious. I was like, do you know how many hundreds of those pork chops I let ruin out there? And then, you know, you started getting a little bit more advanced, and you made the bacon and the dried meats and all that stuff. And I'm just sitting there like, oh my goodness. Like, I did not realize that this was possible. And so it's been a very eye-opening to me, you know, having you guys down and seeing what all you do with it and everything. It's been a different, I wouldn't say we still need to kill them. I guess that's what I was going to say. Like, and some, like, a lot of them still do get, you know, just drug off because we just need to kill them. But it has opened my eyes to what you can do with this stuff.
I'm going to be honest too. Like, going down the very first year, I was, I took it as a charge. I took it as, This is the cross that I'm going to die on. I am going to eat one. I am going to show that you can eat them, and it just takes a little bit of care. And again, there were so many elements that I was not aware of. Again, heat and how warm it always is. What is nice though, at night we had that breeze going, so it was like 50 degrees. Everything was dry, so hanging up the hog, gut it out, and just letting it get down to, you know, 50 degrees in that overnight period, we were still getting very quality meat on the other side of that. It wasn't spoiling. But I will say, when that sun comes up, the flies wake up. And even though the discarded parts, like, we, you know, you just took the head off and kicked that because we were splitting the body, and then we were doing just a quick quarter and get those in coolers. It was a race to get those large cuts before the flies started enveloping, because when I went over to, you know, help you throw those heads away, they already had, you know, maggot eggs in the nose and in the ear and like inside where the tongue was at. Like, no time was spent on consuming these things. So, you know, it's one of those things, like, too, you said, you shoot the hog and then kick it off to the side of the ditch. It don't take long for that to not be a visual thing anymore, where that thing's consumed and gone. You don't have to think about it anymore. You don't have to think about your action, because, again, everything, as you told me, everything in Oklahoma wants to kill you, sting you, stick you, whatever it is. Things are going, it's a little primal down there. They will consume that animal and it'll be gone. You won't even have to think about it. But having that gift of being able to load up those coolers, bring back those pigs, it charges me again to, you know, we go down again the next year. I did find myself finding a little bit of that inner pride when I saw the landowner and the working son on that farm eat a pork chop that came off of their farm. Like it was just a neat circle that I don't know if that has happened where the working rancher has got a chance to eat a little bit of that problem and enjoy it too. So that was fun that your dad and brother were showing up and loving that. Mm-hmm. I'm in agreement that there's a problem and I'm coming down to solve it. I'm going to take a little bit back and I'm going to continue to try to find new things to do. I know I'm going to drop this episode and yeah, here's a prelude to the next episode. I went ahead and made some Italian pancetta and that has been a home run even more so than the bacon. In the fact that you don't smoke it. So you don't lose a little bit of the fat there. You use it differently where you're actually rendering the fat and using that, that rendered fat as opposed to then discarding it and just wanting the meat aspect of it. There's a little bit different use of it, which times out really good with a good belly of wild boar. So it's been a fun experience. So I'm coming down with two missions now. One, I do want to bring some back, John, but at the same time, I am a hired gun. I am going to try to do what I can. I'm going to take out every pig that I lay my eyes on, or at least do my darndest. Except for one. There will be one pig that I will not take a shot at. And he resides at your new property. We won't even be at your new property. So I won't even get a chance to lay eyes on him. But let's talk about Crispy.
I saw him last week.
That was my next thing is he is still a regular. Make sure you, it's been a little bit since we've had a Crispy update. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Crispy and his story.
Yeah. So on my new property, I got my feeder up and going, had some corn out there and I got a picture of this pig and I was like, something just looks different about this thing. And so I have cell cameras and there's a Tacticam. And so there's a setting you can put on there to where it'll take a picture and a video and you can like request a video and it costs like $5 every 50. So it's not much. And so the next time he showed up, I requested a video just to get a better look. And sure enough, this thing is a feral potbelly pig. So I don't know if somebody, like, I don't know if he got too big and somebody turned him loose or if he escaped or what. But yeah, he's a feral potbelly pig. He's huge. Come to find out, I keep calling him a he. Come to find out, it's a female because I've recently got pictures of two baby potbelly pigs at the feeder. I thought I had sent you that. Yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah. I saw the picture of the babies. I didn't realize that was Crispy.
I assume. Okay. Unless there's a potbelly pig farm somewhere close by that I don't know about and they got a bad fence. But I assume that Crispy is a female and got bred by a feral boar and had these two little potbelly pig babies. I've had plenty of chances to kill Crispy. When I shot my buck, Crispy actually came and bedded down at the base of my tree, like 4 yards from the base of my tree. Keeping me company before the buck showed up. But so, I've thought my wife is the one that named, it Crispy. She thinks it's awesome. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was like a cool kind of novelty thing. I got like 15 yards from him about a week ago. You know, he's not super skittish. But when Crispy started reproducing, that changed my mind a little bit. I was like, I'm going to have a whole herd of midget hogs out here, you know, like little half and half stubby leg things running around. So,
well, they won't go far. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
That far.
Yeah. So
this
I don't know.
New Crispy, development. Oh,
Crispy
no.
might have to go now. So yeah. Nate, who's coming down from Michigan, he is determined to catch it and take it home for his wife. And so I gave him full permission. I told him to, you know, get a net gun or whatever. You could probably run him down. Like I don't think he's that quick. So but yeah, I will say I haven't seen him much the last week. I let my feeder run out of corn And so I guess he was relying on that and went somewhere else. But oh. I'm sure he'll be back. I saw him on Thursday, like almost a week from today. So
Gotcha.
Yeah, Crispy's a cool little guy.
Yes, yes. Oh my goodness, to now have a whole bunch. I mean, you know, the miracle of life, but also the oh shoot.
Yes.
I'm not going to get taken out by regular boars. I'm now going to get midget boars. That's not what we want to have happen. Well, wonderful. I hope to at least have full knowledge of what happens with the Crispy Saga.
I will definitely keep you updated. Yeah.
Well, hey, this has been an awesome time, John. Before we even get to the wrap-ups, what have you done with your buck? Have you had a chance to eat? Oh, we're gonna have two things. We're gonna talk about two things real fast. First, your buck, and then your South Texas hunt where we got an awdad. You got the awdad. Let's start first with your buck. Have you done anything with your buck?
Nothing crazy. I ended up taking him to a processor because I shot him in the middle of the week. I had to go back to work. I do get to, you know, a lot of time off, but I do still have to feed my family. And so, I quartered him up. I just kept the back straps myself. I don't like sending those to the processor. Usually, even when I take a deer there, I'll do the back straps myself. Mm-hmm. My wife loves deer burger. And so a lot of our tacos, stuff like that is made. Actually, we had some last night, I think, or two nights ago. Lots of burger and stuff. I've gotten to wear the back straps. I used to always cut them into little steaks and they'd always get real dried out and stuff. I still haven't tried your mayonnaise thing, by the way. You put mayonnaise on them.
Well, but now it's... You brush it like lightly.
Okay. Yeah.
You don't lather them down.
Yeah.
It's just a brush of mayo.
Okay.
Whole science behind that. Fast forward it. It gets it really crispy. That's what it does.
Yeah. But part of the reason I haven't tried the mayo thing is because usually the way I do it is I cut off all the silver skin, you know, clean it up, and I usually cut it into thirds. Like I'll cut one back strap into three big pieces. Mm-hmm. And Traeger it like that whole. So it's almost like a small roast, you know? And then, you know, after you cook it, then you cut it up into steaks or, you know, portions, however you want to say it. So I've done that. Nothing super crazy with the buck. I'm a fairly picky eater. You know that.
Yes.
So not doing too awful much. One thing I haven't done it with this buck, but one other thing I really like to do is, get a hot cast iron skillet and just put a bunch of butter in there and cut slices of backstrap pretty darn thin and just put a little bit of garlic salt on there and then just throw them in that hot butter for, you know, 10 seconds on each side, something like that. And my wife and I will just stand by the stove and, you just know,
like, almost like fondue. At
exactly.
That point.
Yeah. You throw it in there, cook it and eat it. Cause you know, it needs to be hot. So that's one thing I like to do. Deer fried steak. My wife makes a mean deer fried steak. That's obviously a big Southern favorite. So. As far as the awdad, I honestly haven't done much with it. I got some summer sausage made. I took it to the processor as well. Cause I got home from that trip on a weekday also. Mm-hmm. I got some jalapeno cheese summer sausage. Honestly was not impressed with it. It was kind of porky, like almost like a bologna type texture to it, which I was not expecting whatsoever. Which is funny because like part of the reason I got that, cause I was like, if nothing else is good, like if, you know, Awdad has a pretty bad reputation too, also like hog, I was like, if anything's going to be good, it's probably jalapeno cheese summer sausage. Cause all the other flavors will mask it. But the meat itself, it's pretty pink, and I was not a big fan. I still have some, so you can have a log if you want. But yeah, I am very excited. I saved an entire shoulder and a backstrap for you for when you come down. And so, yeah, I'm going to let you kind of be the guinea pig, and we'll see, you know, what you can do with it. And then I'll just copy you after that. So
perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
So as we were talking, like, backstrap, like, I think that thirds plan right there on the Traeger, like, we just won't go too crazy. That's that's like, I mean, you know, lock and seal right there. That's going to work out amazing for that. That shoulder, I think if we put it on the Traeger for just a little while, get it back into a dish, wrap it, put some, you know, either some water, or if we've got some juice there at the cottage, wrap it up in there, throw that, and like finish it in the oven, and just really go for that shredded awdad. Like, to do awdad sliders, I think would be really good, especially since we're playing this area we've never been. So to give that protein enough chance to break down and to shred out, I mean, and then if worse comes to worse, a little bit more of Sweet Baby Ray's and everything will taste good. So
right.
That, at least that's the plan that I had going.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But no, I am excited because while I was there on that hunt, the guide made us a neck roast actually from Awdad. Because that was like the first thing I asked him. The hunt hadn't even started. We were talking about Awdad, and I wasn't even there to hunt Awdad. I was there to hunt mule deer, and I ended up killing an Awdad. But that was like the first thing I asked him. I was like, man, all I hear is that Awdad is not good. And he like looked at me almost offended, like, and he went straight to the fridge, and it was a roast that they had had, you know, a day or two before. And so he just, you know, just heated it up as leftovers, and it was delicious. Now the guy had a lot of spices on it. I'll throw it out there. He was Hispanic, and he made it Hispanic style. But it was dang good. So
awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I'm geeked, man. I'm ready to come down. Even if it's just, we do that. That's what I'm stoked for. Well, hey, John, I know you're not on the podcast or recording podcasts anymore, but how can folks follow along with you? How can they, you know, check in on Crispy now and then? Where can we find you?
Definitely Instagram. Right now, my Instagram handle is still OK Outdoors Podcast, or Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I'm probably going to change the name now that I'm retired from the podcast world, but I just haven't thought of anything creative or cool yet. So right now, it's still just Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I'm posting a lot of stuff about this new property, lots of stories and pictures. I have really good turkey numbers on this place, and so very, very excited about that. Turkey season's less than a month away now, so... yeah, that's definitely the best place to find me. And hopefully every now and again, my old buddies like Nick and some of the other guys from network will have me on, and I'll be able to do some little updates that way.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, hey, hold on just a second, John. I'm going to let our listeners on out. Folks, I hope you enjoy just this talk between friends. Like, we're just catching up, and John, like, we've been texting back and forth, but now we kind of unpack a little bit of some of the big stuff on property management, on, you know, this debate between hogs and just shooting them, and then you get these guys that come in that want to eat them and do more and feel bad that you're shooting all these hogs, but there's a whole purpose behind them, and to finally, like, put those together that we got to get rid of these hogs, at least in the numbers that they're in. And just the back and forth that we had to even, like, being able to now, when we get these hogs, make something out of them and be able to celebrate our hunts through eating and through sharing that with our friends and family. So folks, whether it's going to be outside kind of working with machinery and trying to, you know, manipulate the land, you're going to need your buck knife out there for something. Or if you're going to be in the kitchen and you're going to have that big slicer, make sure that the knife that you are using is very sharp.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, space mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.